Well, folks, buckle up for 3 hours of NFL news. I'm not sure there's anything else to talk about on tonight's program. The NFL is on a collection of drugs right now that I don't think has been seen or rivaled in any other sport. And this is the way it is every year in the NFL. And we can't wait to bring it to you after hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. My producer for tonight, Chris Uno Serrell. We're with you till 9 p.m. this evening. And like I led with, a lot of the conversation over the next 3 hours is going to be about the NFL. Whether it's the Chiefs or teams across the league, guys are getting traded, guys are getting signed, free agency is out in full force in the National Football League. No guests lined up for tonight's program, so it's going to be you, it's going to be Chris, and it's going to be myself here tonight on After Hours. Let's kick things off with all of the Kansas City Chiefs news and notes from the weekend as well as today. I think the biggest storyline to follow is the fact that the Chiefs have now re-signed Nick Bolton. That is something that I'm not sure anybody saw coming. I know, I mean, I spent a lot of time talking to guys around the building, whether it was CDOT or Alex or anybody around here. Nobody thought that Nick Bolton was coming back to Kansas City, especially after the Chiefs announced the franchise tag for Trey Smith. And I think even after the Joe Tooney trade, I did not think that it was entirely plausible to assume that Nick Bolton was going to be coming back to the Chiefs next year. But good news is we were all wrong. Chiefs are keeping Nick Bolton in Kansas City on a 3-year, $45 million contract. $30 million of that will be guaranteed. And I want to get down into the real details of it, but I believe that this may be the first double-digit, the first seven-figure-a-year deal that the Chiefs have signed a linebacker for since Brett Veach became general manager. I mean, I don't know how far back you'd have to go.
Eight-figure.
Yeah, yeah, you're exactly right. Eight figures. I mean, I guess Tom Bahali and or Justin Houston, but they were glorified edge rushers, right?
Yeah, back when it was
Sutton's 3-4 system.
Yeah, they don't count as a regular linebacker, no.
I don't know if they've ever signed a 4-3 linebacker to a $10 million or more a year deal, but that's exactly what's going on in this situation. Bolton, of course, second-round pick back in 2021 out of the University of Missouri, so Tigers fans who are also Chiefs fans, thrilled about this. In his career now, in four seasons so far, Nick Bolton has 559 career tackles, 37 tackles for loss. That is postseason and regular season combined. The crazy thing, and this is a wild stat to look at, since 2000, there are five players to have at least 550-plus tackles and 35 or more tackles for loss over their first 4 years, regular season, postseason combined. Nick Bolton, Luke Kuechly, Lavonte David, Navarro Bowman, and Patrick Willis. That's an unbelievable company to solidify yourself in. I know the complaint with Nick Bolton has always been and will probably continue to be, he's not elite in pass coverage, right? He is a bit of a liability when it comes to guarding receivers and or running backs and tight ends. He's not really guarding receivers all that often, I wouldn't imagine. But mostly running backs and tight ends when they're out in passing situations. But when he has a play to make in the gap or in space, one-on-one, if he's got an opportunity to make a tackle, he's going to make that tackle. And Nick Bolton not going anywhere anytime soon. Somebody said Anthony Hitchens. Somebody in our text line, which is 913-586-7965. Someone's saying that Anthony Hitchens,
he didn't get eight figures AAV. His number, I think, was like, I want to say it was like six or seven AAV. So it was seven figures. I don't think it was double digit. I don't think it was like eight figures a year.
I mean, for his career, Anthony Hitchens made around $5 million per year. The Chiefs signed him in 2018 to a 5-year, $45 million contract. So even that,
so nine a year
is nine a year. So not 10. Is his last year in 2021. He had 5.8 in his base salary. His prorated bonus was 4.2. And then his workout, but I mean, but again, in terms of his total AAV, and he was never paid out more than, I guess his first year, his total cash paid was $14.8 million. But that included signing bonus and other things. Someone said it was way too much, whatever it was. All right. I guess I'll allow it.
No.
I'm an Iowa guy, so I would come to the defense of Anthony Hitchens a little bit. But yeah, that's probably too much money to be paid out to Anthony Hitchens. Obviously, we saw what happened with the Chiefs after that. Eight figures would be $100 million. No, that's nine.
Yeah, that's nine figures.
Nine figures. One figure, a dollar. Two figures, $10. Three figures, $100. A thousand would be four. 10,000, five. 100,000, six. A million, seven. 10 million, eight. So that's on me. I think I might have boggled everybody's mind with that one. But that's kind of the big piece of news that we got over the weekend. One of, for the Chiefs, is the re-signing of Nick Bolton, which, again, and Chris, you can let me know. Did you see that coming? Because I didn't.
I didn't see it at the number that they signed him at. Because it's 15 AAV. Like, I didn't expect that. I thought it, if they were going to bring him back on a multi-year, it'd probably be closer to 12 AAV. But I thought he was most likely going to be back on a one-year, like a Willie Gay type deal when he signed with the Saints, 1 year, $6 million. Because I didn't know if there was going to be a huge market for him, because there's not that many teams that can use him the way that the Chiefs can. But I'm not shocked that he's back. And the reason why I'm not shocked is just simply because Spags loves him.
Yeah.
He every time you hear him talk about Bolton, there is just, it's this glowing review. He loves that dude. He loves how he can use him. He loves how smart he is and his leadership qualities. So if you just hear Spags talk about Nick Bolton, it's like, oh, there's no way he's going to let him leave. But it's just, the thing that was surprising was the number. Like 15 a year, that's a pretty high number for a linebacker that, while really good against the run and an excellent blitzer, does have some limitations in pass coverage. But you are also not using him in pass coverage as much as you normally would use your Mike linebacker, because they do send him on blitzes a lot. And they do run a lot of man coverage. And there's a lot of times where he gets the assignment against the running back. So
yeah,
that regard, you can find ways to work around that.
He's not a tier one linebacker in the National Football League. He's not Fred Warner. But do you risk letting a tier two linebacker go? I mean, you're not going to find a guy who is elite in every facet of the game of football at the linebacker position. It is incredibly hard to play that position now. And there's maybe only two or three guys who you think are elite or at least good at every aspect of what it means to be a linebacker in the National Football League. Nick Bolton is elite in terms of his play recognition, in terms of his intelligence and his field IQ, and his tackling ability. You sacrifice a little bit in terms of his pass coverage, and you let that be. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. This feels like Steve Spagnuolo was in Brett Veach's office every day for the last two. He might have had a blanket and pillow and was sleeping on Veach's couch, like, just to make sure that he was there morning, noon, and night talking to Brett Veach about re-signing Nick Bolton because of how much he means and how much Steve Spagnuolo loves having him as the quarterback of this defense.
Oh, yeah, Spags was definitely in Veach's ear. He was definitely talking to Andy, too, because I think Andy has final say in all that. And I guarantee you he was talking to those guys, and he was pounding the table for Bolton. Because, the Chiefs generally aren't going to, I think that was the big surprising part, was how much money they gave a linebacker. Because, we saw last offseason, Drew Tranquil got a very, very team-friendly deal. What was it, $3 million AAV, something like that? It was very team-friendly for someone that was producing the way that he was. So to now kind of look at their scenario and, basically in the last two offseasons, they've signed their top two linebackers to three-year deals totaling now almost $55 million. That's a lot of money you got tied up in your linebacking core. So, obviously, that means draft-wise, you got to really hit on some of these key positions here. And, I think after what we saw today in free agency and really, throughout the weekend, I don't really know how much more money the Chiefs are going to be willing to spend, because you still got to think about Trey Smith and, let's see what happens with Charles Omenihu.
So. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of questions to be had. One of the questions that we saw answered over the weekend was the wide receiver position, or at least that wide receiver three spot. Chiefs are going to bring back Hollywood Brown on a one-year deal. Schefter reported that on Saturday, courtesy of ESPN. One-year deal worth up to $11 million. About $4 million of that is in performance incentives over the course of the year. Another $500,000 of that is a preseason roster bonus of sorts. So total, it's about $6.5 million in base salary for Hollywood Brown to come back next season, and played in only two games a year ago. So we might get hopefully a better opportunity to see Hollywood Brown in this offense next year. Kind of gives you all you need to know about the Chiefs wide receivers 1, 2, and 3. And then after those two re-signings over the weekend is when things really got interesting for this Chiefs team. I'll begin with the lesser of the two biggest news stories of the day with the Chiefs free agent market, and that is that the Chiefs picked up Elijah Mitchell, who was a former San Francisco 49ers running back. He was a sixth round pick back in 2021, and as a rookie, he was their leading rusher before the trade for Christian McCaffrey. In 2021, he had 963 yards rushing and 5 touchdowns, but has been just crushed by injuries and other things. And so it's one of those situations where with Samaje Perine going back to the Cincinnati Bengals, the Chiefs felt it necessary to go after another quote-unquote running back 3. And they went back to the well with another running back who was sort of on his way out of the league, kind of like Samaje Perine was last year, kind of like Jerick McKinnon was a little bit when the Chiefs brought him in a few seasons ago. He's only 26 years old, but has never played in more than 11 regular season games. And in fact, he missed all of last year in 2024. He's had hamstring injuries, knee issues, concussions, shoulder injuries, rib injuries. He is a walking poster child for the healthcare system. So what he can provide in Kansas City, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see. But the fact that he's being brought in not as the guy that's going to try to usurp Isaiah Pacheco, I still think the Chiefs are going to go after a running back in the draft. He's going to be the running back 3 for this Chiefs team, and I don't think there's much of a question surrounding it.
Yeah, like I said, I just think it's for him, you're just getting a veteran. He kind of has a lot of the same skill sets that you have with with Jet McKinnon. Jet McKinnon, also a former 49ers running back, and you know, a lot of that same skill set, especially as one of those guys that runs really well in like zone running scheme. He does, you know, they run that a lot in San Francisco, and you know, he had some success when he was able to stay healthy there his rookie year. I mean, yeah, I still think they're going to draft a running back, but getting somebody that fits in your system and does some of the things you like to do with other running backs, I think it makes sense to go get him, but I don't think people should hold out a lot of hope that he's going to have a major effect on the team.
No,
just he can't stay healthy.
No, he's just a roster guy. Somebody in the text line said he's only getting $183,000 guaranteed. This is a tryout for a guy with a 4.35 40.
100%.
Yeah.
I mean, if he does, I mean, there's a really good chance he doesn't make it out of camp. I mean, it's, yeah, 183 guaranteed. Like, he could very well be a camp casualty. It's cool. I like Elijah Mitchell. He was really awesome his rookie year for the 49ers, but then they very quickly the next year pivoted to Christian McCaffrey with the trade, and they haven't really looked back since. So I like Elijah a lot, but I'm not sure Elijah's going to be a big-time fix for them in their running back room.
Absolutely not. But you know who might be a big-time fix? And this is the last story that we'll get to before we hit our first break here. Jalen Moore. Get to know the name, folks, because he is your new left tackle. The Chiefs agreeing to a 2-year, $30 million contract with the former San Francisco 49ers tackle. Now, he played a lot as a backup in San Francisco, mostly behind Trent Williams. But when Williams has been down with injury, he has filled in that slot. He's played in 55 games, but he started only 12. He played in 15 games in 2024, 5 of those starts after Trent Williams went down with an injury. He was a fifth-round pick back in 2021 out of Western Michigan, where he was teammates with Mike Caliendo. So, you know, kind of an interesting...
And Sky Moore.
And Sky Moore. I don't feel like that reminder was necessary for the folks.
I mean, he was on the team.
He was on the team.
And he's on the team now. So, I mean, I think you should mention that.
Fair. So we'll see. I mean, 2 years, $30 million. I think after you saw what Alaric Jackson and Ronnie Stanley re-signed, you know, when Ronnie Stanley re-signed with the Ravens, I think the Chiefs needed a pivot. And this is the direction where they decided to go. For $15 million a year, Jalen Moore is going to be your starting left tackle next season. I think that this increases the likelihood that Kingsley Suamataia is going to be your starting left guard. And then you've got Creed, Trey Smith, and then Juwan Taylor as your center, right guard, right tackle. Does this mean that the Chiefs won't go after a tackle in the draft? Absolutely not. I still think that they will look at the tackle position in the draft, but maybe no longer at 31, right? I think the possibility of trading up in this draft is pretty much dead in the water. This is a situation where with the re-signing of Hollywood Brown, with the re-signing of Nick Bolton, and with the signing of Jalen Moore, the Chiefs can now once again, as they've done in the past, go and look towards best player available in this draft, right? Rather than looking immediately at positional need. I certainly think, especially after the news of today, they're going to need to go after a defensive tackle. Now, they might still have an opportunity here in free agency, but with the amount of money they've spent over the last 3 days, I don't know how much they have left. It's going to be fascinating to watch, but the Chiefs have, at least for the next 2 years, their starting left tackle in Jalen Moore.
We've talked about this. I never thought that 31 was really a place you were going to take tackle. This isn't a good tackle draft. The guys in this tackle class just at the top end, it's just not that good. You're not trading up for, like, basically all these guys that we're talking about at the top end are guys that are a lot of teams think are going to have to be guards. A lot of, like, Will Campbell is the top rated tackle in this class, and a lot of people think he's going to have to move inside to guard. You know, Armon Membu, some people think he's the best tackle. He's a right tackle or a guard. Some people think he might have to move inside. Like, if the top guys at the tackle position are guys that, like, a good chunk of teams think are going to have to move inside to guard, it's not a good tackle class. So I never thought it was an option. I still think there's some project guys you could probably take later, like a Holland Pierce from Rutgers or a Charles Grant from William & Mary. But that's like third, fourth round range. I think there's still a chance that they do that. I've never been of the mindset that tackle was a position you could hit on, because this – I'm not sure any of those guys in the first round are actually tackles.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. And I think that this was a good move by the Chiefs. This was the position they needed to shore up, and they've done that. And it sounds like they have a lot of belief, and they are very intrigued by the possibility of Kingsley Suamataia at left guard. What that will look like, we won't find out until next season. But there's a lot more to get to here today on the show. 913-586-7965. We got a lot of messages from you already in the text line. We will take a break, come back, and read some of those here for you on tonight's edition of After Hours, right here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
The text line's a funny thing. Sometimes people throw a thought out there that really makes you think, right? Sort of like, oh, you know, you raise a good point. Other times people say something on the text line and you're like, have you been hit in the head one too many times? Like, should somebody be worried about your health? Somebody in the text line a little bit ago said that Brett Veach has never hit on the draft. He said maybe McDuffie. Chris, I know that you kind of went back and forth with him a little bit on the text line. You mentioned some of the names. This whole methodology from some folks that Brett Veach is somehow not good at drafting. He's not a great general manager when it comes to the NFL draft. Has he had misses? Yes, every general manager has misses, but he's got some pretty outstanding hits since he took over. Brett Veach became the general manager of the Chiefs in July of 2017. So this was right after the 2017 NFL draft, in which the Chiefs took Patrick Mahomes. Now, yes, John Dorsey does get credit for being the general manager when the Chiefs drafted Patrick Mahomes. How did the Chiefs discover Patrick Mahomes, though? Does anybody recall that story? Brett Veach was sitting in his office one day, and he pulled up film because he was watching, he was scouting an offensive lineman at Texas Tech for the Chiefs. And he watched a little bit of film, and he wound up with his biggest takeaway being Patrick Mahomes is that dude. And immediately walked himself over to Andy Reid's office and said, this is our franchise quarterback. Patrick Mahomes should be our guy. He is an unbelievable talent. So yes, John Dorsey drafted, quote unquote, Patrick Mahomes, but it was at the insistence of Brett Veach who first kind of discovered him within that Chiefs organization and got the ball rolling. And then in 2018, right, he gets hired as the GM in July of 2017. So 2018 was his first draft class. And in that draft class, you know, Breland Speaks, Derek Nnadi, Dorian O'Daniel, Armani Watts, Tre'Von Smith, Khalil McKenzie. Not a great draft class. I would agree. There are some misses in there, but Derek Nnadi's had good performances. He's done some good things in Kansas City. Is it, you know, is he the upper echelon? No. 2019, you had Mecole Hardman, who was an outstanding return man at certain points of his career. Great gadget wide receiver. Maybe not worthy of a second round pick. Juan Thornhill, who did some good things in Kansas City. Colin Saunders, who did some good things. Nick Allegretti was a seventh round pick in 2019. And look what he was able to accomplish in Kansas City and then catapulted himself into a situation with the Commanders, which is pretty good. 2020, that was the draft where they took Clyde Edwards-Helaire at 32, which, Chris, you and I both agree was a bad move. Running back in the first round is hard to swallow anyway, but a guy like Clyde at 32 just did not make any sense.
I mean, the thing was, to me, it was more so it was Clyde than it was the running back pick. It was like, you had Jonathan Taylor, right?
Exactly.
There.
Literally, like,
I mean, literally, I was pounding 10, the table for later. Jonathan Taylor.
Yeah.
I mean, even DeAndre Swift would have been a better pick, but I was all in on Jonathan Taylor, and you chose Clyde.
Yeah, it's a tough
one. You chose a 5'6 running back.
Oh, yeah. In the second round, they took Willie Gay. Turned out to be a pretty good player. In the fourth of that draft, you got L'Jarius Sneed. So you took a Pro Bowl caliber player in the fourth round, and then in the fifth, you took Mike Dana, who has done some pretty good things for the Kansas City Chiefs. 2021 is kind of the draft where you hang your hat on if you're Brett Veach. Nick Bolton in the second.
22, I think, is probably a little
22,
better.
22, probably, you're right. But, I mean, I would say 21 has more of your... It has higher highs, I guess. You got Nick Bolton, Creed Humphrey, Noah Gray was in that draft class, and you hit Trey Smith in the sixth in 21. And then in 2022, like you mentioned, Trent McDuffie, George Karlaftis, Brian Cook, Leo Chanel, Jalen Watson, Isaiah Pacheco, Joshua Williams, Nazee Johnson, all in that draft class. 2023, you hit on Rashee Rice, Shamari Connor, who's become much of a utility guy in that secondary. And then, you know, you've got Felix Anudike Uzama, which hopefully the jury's still out there and we haven't seen the best that we're going to see from Felix Anudike Uzama.
He's shown some flashes. He hasn't quite, we haven't gotten what we've wanted in the first couple of years, but you see some flashes, especially in a run game.
Yeah, yeah.
See some flashes.
And then Wanye Morris in the third, who is, I think he's a stopgap tackle. He's a guy that you can sort of use at left tackle and right tackle when you need it, when a guy needs a breather or somebody, you know, comes up, you know, hammy's a little bit tight. And then this past year, you got Xavier Worthy in the first round. Kingsley Suamataia in the second. Maybe he ends up being an outstanding left guard. We don't know. He's only played 1 year in this league. So to say that Brett Veach hasn't drafted well, I think is very much unfair. He's hit a lot more than some other general managers, hence the reason why he still has a job. And a lot of other GMs don't.
Yeah, I'm not. I don't. Like I said, I think that was a troll. Like, I don't. I'm not gonna go out here and entertain. I went back and forth a little bit, but that's a troll.
Somebody asked, "Why do I sound angry all the time?" I don't mean to sound angry.
Maybe it's because you raise your voice.
I did. I did raise. Yeah,
you'd be raising your voice a lot.
I have no ability to I cannot register the volume of my voice. I have been yelled at for it my entire life. Like, I don't realize how loud I'm being ever. Like, my wife will be sitting in the living room and she'll yell at me. She's like, why are you yelling? Why are you being so loud right now? I'm not trying to. I'm just like, I get invested in the conversation. And as the conversation grows, apparently my volume does too. So I apologize if I sound angry. I just disagreed with his statement.
I do think that someone in Texas said 22 is his best. Yeah, 22 I think was by far his best job. It was a draft you had to do well.
Yeah.
You got a bunch of picks back for that trade with Tyreek Hill. And you hit on most of your picks in a way that you don't see teams do ever, really. You don't see teams find starters in the seventh round of the draft very often. And the Chiefs found two starters in the seventh round with Pacheco and Jalen Watson. Like, that's how you know that they've been hitting on that. So yeah, I just think that they're trolling. They're probably a hater. And we don't need to entertain haters on here.
I mean, you're not gonna hit on everyone. Right. That's just the nature of the job. If you're expecting your general manager to hit on every draft pick in every draft every year, you'd have the greatest team of all time every single season. I mean, that GM would never get fired. He'd be there for 50 years.
I mean, just for context, if you hit on three picks in your draft, that's a great draft. Like, that's just, if you hit on three, that's a great draft. That's how hard drafting is, especially now, especially like day three now, because it's getting so much harder because a lot of the really good players are staying because of NIL and whatnot. If you can hit on three guys in a given draft, that's a really good draft.
And think about it from this standpoint. Where has Brett Veach been? Like, where has Brett Veach been as a general manager in the draft every single year? The Chiefs have picked anywhere between, 28 and 32, 29 and 32 every single year since he has become the general manager of the Kansas City Chiefs. So you're picking in the final three or four picks of every round of every draft you've ever been a part of, and he's still finding ways to hit on key positions at key moments when the organization has needed it the most. And he's had a great support system around him. Somebody said, well, do you get credit for scouting or being the general manager? You get credit for both. I'm giving John Dorsey credit for drafting Patrick Mahomes. I'm just saying it also feels like Brett Veach deserves a little bit of credit for his role in pushing the organization towards, hey, look at this Patrick Mahomes guy. Like, he's pretty unbelievable when you watch him on tape. And apparently they heeded that advice and traded up from 27 to 10 and changed the entire trajectory of this franchise for the past 8 years and maybe for the next 8 years after this one. It's been pretty unbelievable. 913-586-7965. I can't believe this. Someone said, you need to calm down, little man. Don't raise your voice at the listeners.
I think they're just messing
Whoa.
With you.
Well, I don't think little was necessary.
I think they're
Am
just
I short of stature?
You.
Yes, absolutely. But that was uncalled for. Let me self-deprecate. I don't need you making the short jokes for me. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero. A lot of messages in the text line. We'll continue to get through those throughout the show. But the NFL is not just the Kansas City Chiefs. There is a lot going on across the NFL right now that we want to get to on tonight's program. So stick around. This is 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Well, the Kansas City Chiefs came up with some answers that we have been asking questions about. Left tackle position, what they're going to do at wide receiver, what's going on with the linebacker situation, Nick Bolton coming back, Hollywood Brown coming back, and the Chiefs inking 49ers left tackle Jalen Moore to a 2-year, $30 million deal. So I think there's less of a question surrounding those positions, but more of a question possibly now surrounding the defensive line. Couple of big stories of former Chiefs who have now gone elsewhere. I mentioned Samaje Perine's going back to the Bengals, hence the reason for the Elijah Mitchell signing. But I had said that defensive tackle was a need in this draft class, as many have, and now even more so. Tershawn Wharton picking up a 3-year, $45.05 million deal with the Carolina Panthers. The deal has a maximum value of some $54 million. Just over 30 of that fully guaranteed by Carolina. I got to say, I expected Turk Wharton to get paid this offseason, but I was not expecting $15, $16, $17 million a year for Turk Wharton to end up on another roster. Yeah, I mean, it's got a max value. If everything goes the right way, it's going to end up at $54 million over 3 years. But the base of it is $45 for three, with incentives and escalators up to $54. $30 million of that fully guaranteed. Not what I expected Turk Wharton to get on the market.
Yeah, I is a little more than I thought he was going to get in terms of AAV. I thought he was going to be closer to like 12. But I did think he would get way more than the Chiefs were going to be willing to pay him, especially because, like, I do think that his production is very dependent on Chris Jones and George Karloftis and whatnot. Still good, but, I mean, I think that'll probably end up being an overpay from the Panthers. But, yeah, I mean, I'm happy for Turk. I'm really – that's a kid that came out of Rolla and didn't have a whole lot of hype. And look at him now. Got a nice premium contract, set himself up with generational wealth for years to come. If he takes care of his money, he'll be set for life. I'm happy for him. Really, really happy for him. I'm glad he's going to be able to go out there and have a nice chance to make himself some good money and have some success down in Carolina.
Yeah, he earned the contract that he received from the Carolina Panthers, and it just was something that – the Chiefs couldn't have afforded that. Not no. With the other things that they have to get figured out. Because now you point to, all right, what's going on with Charles Omenihu? That is now a major, major question for this Chiefs team. And I think they're going to do everything in their power to re-sign him and get him to stick around. He missed a big chunk of this season because of the ACL injury that he suffered in the playoffs last year. So we didn't get a lot of opportunity to see him in this past year with the Kansas City Chiefs. And I just am not of the belief that you're ready to just hand over the keys to Felix Anudike Uzomah. I haven't seen enough of that. I think he was better this past season than he was in his rookie year, but I haven't seen enough to say, okay, that's a guy who can be an every down defensive end in the National Football League. Can he get there? I don't know. I certainly hope so. Chiefs used a first round pick on him. But this makes a re-signing of Charles Omenihu even more important, especially considering what we've seen some other guys already make. I mean, look at what Harold Landry got paid by the Patriots over the weekend. You got to keep a guy like that around. And for Tershawn Wharton, 8.5 sacks last year between the regular season and postseason, which led the team. Good for him. Will he put up the same level of production that he did when he was in Kansas City? Because like you said, having guys like Chris Jones and George Karloftis along that defensive line for you made it a lot more one-on-ones that you had to contend with than it was a double team or a chip block by a running back or a tight end. I don't know. But he'll also get a lot more snaps, I would imagine, with this Carolina Panthers team than he did in Kansas City. I mean, this past year with the Chiefs, he only played like 62% of the snaps, which was the most of his career by a pretty wide margin at that, I may add. But yeah, good for Tershawn Wharton going and getting that big time deal with the Carolina Panthers. The other story, Justin Watson signing with the Houston Texans. Now, I'm not entirely sure what the monetary side of that is.
I haven't seen any financials.
I haven't seen anything.
I would assume it's a 1-year deal for not that much money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure what would make it enough for you to just leave Kansas City, but I don't know. I think
it might have been a situation where the Chiefs just at his point with his level of experience and age and whatnot, they were like, let's go a little bit younger, or we can upgrade and get a better option at the third or fourth, in this case, probably fourth receiver. So I think that might be the situation, too.
Yeah. And you look at the Texans.
Like I said, we don't know what the financials are.
Right. For the Texans, you're going to lose. You know, Tank Dell's not going to play this next season. Not after how gruesome that injury was against the Chiefs. Stephon Diggs is a free agent. You've got Nico Collins back, but outside of that, your receiver core has got some questions, as does your offensive line. And we'll get to that conversation here a little bit later. 913-586-7965. We have some more messages here in the text line. It is active tonight. We'll continue to read those as we go along here. Logan Weber here alongside Chris Unocero. You're listening to After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan. It's March matchup season at BetM.
After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. Chris Unocero alongside. Our text line number, 913-586-7965. Talking Chiefs here in the first hour of the program. Re-signing Nick Bolton, re-signing Hollywood Brown. You've got Jalen Moore now as the Chiefs' left tackle on that two-year, $30 million deal. And now the question becomes, where do the Chiefs move from here? Turk Wharton signing with the Carolina Panthers on a big-time deal, the former undrafted free agent picking up potentially $54 million for three seasons with Carolina. Justin Watson is going to Houston. Samaje Perine going back to Cincinnati to reunite with the Bengals. And some folks in the text line talking about where, you know, Chiefs need a pass rush D tackle. Somebody in the text line says that. And they need a pass rush and a D tackle to go with Big Chris. And we gave Bolton the money. I don't know if all of the money's gone at this point. I think they might still be able to afford Charles Omenihu for a re-signing, depending on what the price point is. But this feels more and more to me like the Chiefs are going to focus a lot on the defensive side of the football and the front four come April with the NFL draft. Chris, I know you cover a lot of NFL draft stuff. You've got your Character Concerns podcast that you do with Jay Binkley. And you guys talk a lot of NFL draft and a lot of college ball when it leads up to what's going on in April next month. Would you be under that assumption as well that the Chiefs are going to take a big run on some defensive linemen and edge rushers coming up here with the NFL draft in Indy?
I mean, the position I've been saying for months now that they needed to hit on in the first round is defensive tackle. It's a great defensive line class, especially defensive tackle. And the value of some of these guys is kind of bouncing around. But, you know, there's a chance you can have someone like a Derek Harmon or a Walter Nolan late in the first round. Even a guy like Nick Scorton, who's listed as an edge rusher, but with his size, he could probably move inside and play defensive tackle when need be because he's like 6'4". 280, 285. So, like, that's not a position. That's not someone that size you're generally going to play on the outside a whole lot. But, like, yeah, there's a lot of options. I think defensive tackle needs to be your biggest hit, unless you have like a can't miss corner prospect that you really like, or a can't miss like if Luther Burden falls to 31, I would be all for them taking him at 31 there because I really like Luther Burden. But yeah, I think you should go in with the idea of if there's a guy worth taking at 31, a defensive tackle, defensive line in general, then that's where they need to go.
I want to correct myself. I said that the draft was in Indy. It's in Green Bay. The combine was in Indianapolis.
Correct.
And
yeah.
I'd flip-flopped it in my head. But I agree with you because the one thing we've talked about with this Chiefs defensive line is that the feeling is that they need to get a little bit younger in that room. Not to say that they're older in that room, but you know, I mean, Derek Nnadi was 27, 28. He's a free agent right now. Mike Pinnell's in his 30s. Chris Jones is now in his 30s. Charles Omenihu even is in his late 20s at this point. You've got Felix Anudike Uzama, 22, 23 years old, whatever, however old he is now. George Karloftis is 24. But the feeling was that you had to attack that position and get younger, especially at defensive tackle. And I think with the answer to the question of who's going to be wide receiver three, now that you've got Hollywood Brown back, that's kind of been answered for you. You were wondering what was going to happen at left tackle. Okay, there's Jalen Moore. Kingsley Suamataia slides in pretty cleanly there at left guard, and we're moving on. Middle linebacker, okay, we don't need to go after a middle linebacker anymore because Nick Bolton's coming back. So you can look at cornerback, you can look at defensive tackle and defensive end, and you can look at, somebody just mentioned this in the text line, running back. Somebody asked, are we still going after a running back in the draft after signing Elijah Mitchell? In my opinion, hell yes. Elijah Mitchell is at best a running back three for this Chiefs team. Somebody in the text line mentioned earlier, he's only going to get like $283,000 guaranteed or $183,000 guaranteed. He's coming in as a guy who is going to be a fringe roster spot guy. He is looking to make the 53. He is not going in sliding into the starting running back role or even RB2. He is going to be an RB3 for this Chiefs team. I think they absolutely will go after a running back in this draft. You almost have to. If you have any question about the running back position on your team, this is the draft to answer those questions. There are so many guys who could be starting running backs on an NFL team courtesy of this draft class. And that goes from the top five to the top. You could probably have 12 or 13 guys in this draft class be starters on an NFL team at one point or another.
Yeah, my mindset is this. Unless you've got like a generational type running back, you're not going to give him a second contract. So you might as well have a replacement ready to go. Pacheco's not that unless somehow he just turns into that this year, which I don't think he will. So it's like, yeah, you should go out and try to see if you could find an elite running back in the draft. Because this offense for the Chiefs was at its best when they had an elite running back in Kareem Hunt. So I think if you're the Chiefs, big priority number one in the draft after you hit defensive tackle is identify a running back that you think has elite potential and do what you can to get him in here so that you have a guy that can you know, maybe even potentially beat Pacheco out for that starting spot this year, and you have an opportunity to have a weapon that you have long term. So, like I said, unless you've got an elite running back that you're willing to pay long term, I think running back should absolutely be on this list, and they don't have that.
I have a question for you. Because, again, I have reiterated time and again that I am not one of those people who believes in running back in round one. Right, I thought as good as Bijan Robinson was coming out of Texas, I thought he was a late first round pick at best.
Yeah, I would never have taken him. Especially because Jalen Carter was right there, yeah. And you could have had him if you were the Falcons.
I mean, you've got people talking about Ashton Jeanty as possibly creeping into the top 10.
Hell no.
My question for you, because I think I'm of the belief that you and I are on the same page with this. I am very much on the Omarion Hampton hype train. I thought he was phenomenal at North Carolina when I watched tape. And then when I saw him in the combine and I saw, I mean, his legs are tree trunks. If he's there at 31 and you're scared that somebody is going to pick him early or mid second round before you have an opportunity to get him at the end of round two, would you be able to swallow the Chiefs taking Omarion Hampton at 31?
Okay, so...
Right, not being happy about it, but being able to swallow
that's
it.
That's going to be a tough one for... I think it'll split the fan base. If you ever listen to Character Concerns, you know I love Omarion Hampton. That is my favorite running back in this draft class. I love him more than I love Ashton Jeanty. And I'm a big fan of Ashton Jeanty, but like Omarion Hampton to me is like... Of the guys I think that have the highest chance to be an elite... franchise-changing running back, I think he's number one on that list, even above Jeanty, just because size, durability, I think might be a problem for Jeanty. So, yeah, I mean, I love Omarion Hampton. Big, big fan. It would be tough for me to be 100% on board with him at 31, just because... unless there's no worthy defensive tackles, Luther Burden's off the board, no good defensive tackles there. So it's just like, it's not that great sitting there at 31 and you've got Hampton and you really like him and you think he has elite potential. I can get down with that. If that's what the board dictates, I can get down with it. Because I kind of feel like that's what happened back in 2020 when they took Clyde. It was like they were thinking we need to pick the best available running back because the board doesn't really dictate that we take anyone else other than T. Higgins, which I was, you know, all for them taking T. Higgins. Yeah. And they didn't. I was very mad about that because I love T. Higgins. But, you know. Again, I wasn't mad at the pick for running back. I was mad at who they picked because I was all for Jonathan Taylor. If they decided to take Omarion Hampton and they thought he was the best available player there, so be it. If it was not that good of a board at that point, I can live with that. Because at that point, because to me, I think you maximize value when you pick best available at a position you could use. And if he's best available at a position you can use, then you're sticking to your philosophy, and then I'm not going to be mad at you.
For, I mean, 6'2", 220, and he ran a 4.46 at the combine. His broad jump was nearly 11 feet. I mean, he showed a level of explosiveness at his size that was pretty impressive. And I would say at his size, the only guy who maybe had a better day in terms of his measurables might have been Quinshon Judkins. And
DJ Giddens.
DJ Giddens
had a really, really good day.
DJ Giddens did have a good day. Somebody was asking about Devin Neal. Would he be a good pickup in the draft if he's
round
still
three.
On the board?
Not in round one, but round three. If you're sitting there and Devin Neal's at, like, if you're sitting there at 95 and you really like Devin, I like Devin Neal a lot, I'd be cool with that.
Yeah, I was just a little bit disappointed in his 40 at the draft. I mean, running a 4.58 at 5'11", 210. I kind of expected something a little bit better there.
I'm fine with it because Kareem Hunt ran like a 4.6. So it's like, I'm fine with it for a running back. If we're talking about receiver, yes.
Yeah.
But for running back, I don't think it's quite, like, I'm still, even though 4.58 for Caleb Johnson, I'm still in on the Caleb Johnson hype train.
I appreciate that.
I'm still on the Caleb Johnson hype train, even though he ran almost a 4.6.
Hey, man.
I'm cool with it because I think the skill set is still perfectly good.
I love it. 913-586-7965. Stick around. We got two more glorious hours upcoming here of After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Chris Unocero, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.